Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal. And as always, that is John Rauhouse playing in the background. Today we have a very, very fun show. I am talking to guitar great, guitar god, Eric Johnson. Eric was here in Seattle. This was a shorter interview. He had a sound check. And if you know anything about Eric, I can only imagine how intense those sound checks must be, because this guy has such a dialed in rig and is such a perfectionist. But we got a great chat before the sound check. And we also got to hear him play his acoustic, his maiden guitar. And that video is going to be on fretboardjournal.com as well as our YouTube channel right this minute. So if you want to hear what Eric is up to, check those out. And I hope you enjoy our shorter talk. Obviously, Eric needs to be in the Fretboard Journal proper. He is very, very deserving. So we will be doing a longer sit-down interview with him and perhaps going to his new studio very soon and featuring that in our pages. I do want to add that since we did this interview, Fender did send us to try out a new Fender Eric Johnson Strat Thin Line, and it is an incredible guitar. We've been playing with that a bunch. It is always fun when we get electrics here at the Fretboard Journal. We get sent a lot of acoustics, but the electric builders sometimes don't send them to us. But this guitar is absolutely beautiful and plays incredibly. It's got the five-spring trem that Eric loves. The fit and finish on it is just exceptional, and we have been having a blast with it. So check that guitar out if you want a Strat that is a little bit more unique. I can highly recommend it. We are hard at work on the Fretboard Journal's first ever electric issue, as well as Fretboard Journal 43. Both of those will be coming down the pike. Fretboard Journal 42 has been wrapped up and sent off to the printer. So if you want to get that in a few weeks, subscribe. Use the coupon code PODCAST. You will save $5 off of your order. Go to fretboardjournal.com and you can do all of that good stuff. I just want to say a quick story about where I spent part of my last week. I was lucky enough to be invited to go up to Baldface Lodge just outside of Nelson, British Columbia, which is a snowcat lodge, which for those of you who do not ski or snowboard basically means you go to a lodge and instead of taking chairlifts up to ski or snowboard and getting in lines with the masses, you and 10 of your closest friends are in a snowcat that takes you up to the top of a peak where you get to ski down an untracked run. And it is pretty much the most amazing, decadent thing on earth. And the guys at Baldface invited me up there for a very special week event that they were doing with some pro snowboarders, and including, I guess, Danny Davis, I should mention, who is a great musician and actually for a while had a signature Burton snowboard that had the back of the base of which was a Martin guitar fretboard. He was a Martin guitar ambassador, I believe. But a lot of these guys, a lot of these pro-level snowboarders, including some who've medaled in the Olympics, were all guitar guys. And so they invited me up to go check out the place. I got some runs in. I got to hang out with them. And most importantly, I got to feel like the world of guitars is in fine hands. There are young people, including some tremendously talented athletes out there who are taking up the guitar and embracing it the way you or I would. And I did not jam with them. I was a little too shy. I figured it was not my turn to jam with some Olympic medalists, but I had an incredible time. So thank you to Jeff and everyone up at Baldface Lodge, and I hope that I will be invited back. And if anyone is ever looking for a place to go, if you're a skier or a snowboarder, there are like 24 guitars floating around that lodge that are just there for people to check out. And they were all playable. They were all great. They were all well-loved. And I thought that was super-duper cool. Sometimes you go to a boutique hotel or something and they've got a crappy guitar propped up like a prop. And these were not decorations. These were being used. There was a PA system that you could plug into if you ever wanted to. So that was my fun weekend up in Canada. You can see some photos from it on my Instagram, which is just Jason Verlinde. Or if you want to see what the real photographers up there shot with the real riders and snowboarders, the hashtag was Turning Man for the week. So if you hashtag Turning Man, you will see 200 or so photos from Baldface Lodge up in Canada. I will not be in any of them because I was flailing and hanging low, but you can get a sense of what I got to see for the last 4 or 5 days. Before we get to our interview with Eric, today's podcast is sponsored by our friends at Dying Breed Music. Do you know about Dying Breed Music? If you do not, you really should go check them out. Their website is dyingbreedguitars.com. They are all about customer service, and their entire inventory is all about flat top guitars from the golden era, and they have a bunch right now. Lane has, let me see if I can just give this roundup, a 1957 Martin D21 that has the original paperwork and correspondence between the original owner and Martin Guitars, which is always fun. He's got a gorgeous and well-loved 1939 Martin D18 shade top. Those are about as beautiful as guitars get. And then somehow, I don't even know, there's got to be an interesting story to this. He has the leather case that was C.F. Martin III's guitar case in 1911 when he went to Princeton for his 00045. The 00045, I'm guessing, is at the Martin Museum in Nazareth, Pennsylvania. But somehow the case has fled the museum, and Lane has it, and it is available for sale, along with so many other things. Lane is one of my favorite guys to talk to. I think you will enjoy talking to him, too. You can call him at 870-818-3434. He can walk you through his entire inventory, his consignment program, and much, much more. All right, here is my talk with Eric Johnson. I do hope you enjoy it. Once again, this is a short one, but we will be talking to Eric more in depth in the near future. So let me just start by saying, I don't know what you're doing, but you are like the healthiest looking guitar virtuoso I've ever met. Are you doing like yoga and are you vegan and meditating?
Vegan, yeah.
You are?
Yeah, trying to meditate and I am vegan, yeah. Yeah, I like the diet. That's cool. I tried it many years ago as an experiment, and I was like, well, I feel better, so I just stuck with it.
Yeah, that's got to be an anomaly in Texas.
Yeah, you know, it used to be. You know, when we had been touring for many years, when I first started touring and go out and try to survive, it was tough. Now it's not so hard now. You know, even in hotels, they have like entrees and stuff. There's vegetarian friendly. It's just more of a movement. People are, even people that eat meat tend to eat partially vegetarian.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so
and the meditation, does that come into play with your music?
Just keeping the steamroller from going wild and blowing apart. Uh-huh. Kind of trying to keep your mind together. You know, like a Zen thing. There's so many different practices. Is the whole center point of them is to quiet the mind.
Yeah. Is that part of your pre-show ritual when you're on the road like here?
Yeah, and it's always a challenge for me because I always have a pretty rambunctious mind. I'm always futurizing. You're always thinking about the past or thinking about the future, you know, and that's the whole thing. I think the tranquility begins when you get in the present.
Yeah.
We're always worrying about... We're always regretting the past and worrying about the future, they say.
Of course. As your guys said, that's all your copious amounts of gear.
Yeah, I can
sit
here and worry about that. Are they going to set that up right? Is it going to sound right today? What's going to be broken? Yeah, it's like got a big window to look out over it and like work myself up. So yeah. I'll be like in a complete lather by the time I get down there.
And what is, has your setup evolved a lot over the years? I noticed online on some forum you got a new pedal board, which was a big deal for some. Yeah,
Dave Phillips of LA Sound has built me a new pedal board, which is awesome. And it's a little bit more modern. When this tour we're doing is it's a kind of a retrospective off the Avia Musicom record, which was out many years ago.
Yeah.
And when I went to start practicing those songs, I was kind of like, well, this isn't, I had to return to the gear I used when I made that record, and which it's been a really kind of a time-released info kind of capsule for me, because there's certain things I think I was doing back then. You know, as you progress, it's always kind of like there's always two sides of the coin. You might gain this and you might lose that, and then you just got to make sure what you lose is not too valuable to lose, you know. Yeah. And I think there were some things about my technique that was possible because of the sound and gear I was using that I had kind of put along the wayside, which now I'm kind of rediscovering, which is important because I thought, that was too valuable to put away, you know.
Yeah.
So it's actually been a real good thing for me to look at stuff that I hadn't looked at in a long time, and I'm like reincorporating that into now. That's like, and it's sounding better to me, you know.
That's wild.
So yeah, so it's actually a good thing, you know.
And gear-wise, I know over the years you've kind of purged a little bit. Did mm-hmm. you have to, like, go find some gear that you had sold years ago?
Absolutely. You know, I dug out of the closet about half or two-thirds of the stuff. I had, like, these bits and pieces thrown in a drawer, and I had to, like, re-put together this version of this rig I had in AV Musicom. And then I had to, like, really think, oh, and I used these kind of speakers with this kind of ohmage and da-da-da. And it was really interesting because as I did it, the sound got more and more like that record. And there's certain aspects of that sound which I'm glad I'm retrieving, because it was in some ways, there were aspects about it that were better than the sound I was getting now, I thought. So it was like, and then there'd be these little things, I remember I used to do that, and I'd think, that couldn't possibly make any difference, and I would do it, and it would just all lead into this one big, recipe of, you know, an alchemical thing where it kind of came back, you know.
Yeah. Was there anything you couldn't replicate or you couldn't track down?
I think there's certain aspects of the way the guitar I'm using now they're different than this old Strat I had at the time.
Yeah.
And I think possibly the one I had in the beginning was maybe a little better. It was a little more, it had a little more of that kind of fluxy violin-y thing. The one I have now is pretty good. So I don't know. I mean, in all honesty, I think maybe I'm like at 90%. I still think it's not quite. But then, you know, it also, maybe I'm remembering it to be better than it was. You know, that's easy to do. Go, oh, it was so great. And, you know, but yeah, I think mostly it's bagged, but there's still room for retrieve some more stuff.
Yeah. So we saw the giant bus out front. How many guitars do you have on the road with you right
now? I do a little bit of acoustic during the show, so I only have one acoustic, and then I have three Strats and one Telecaster.
Okay.
Just
vintage or the new?
I have one vintage Strat and a new Telecaster and two of the new models. Fenders that I have coming out on February 20th.
Okay, and what's going on with those? Tell.
Well, I've had this guitar Fender for like 10 years. Yeah. It's just my own guitar, but I wanted to make one that was a hollow body. So we kind of copied some of the Gibson 335 stuff. It's just a solid piece of wood through the middle, and then it's hollow on the side, and it has an F hole at the top. It's like a Stratocaster thin line.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that modeled after a guitar you've had in your past?
It's exactly like my signature model that I've had for about, 14 years.
Sure.
But it's a hollow body. Other than that, it's the same.
But you haven't, had you played a hollow body like that before? Or is it just kind of an idea?
I've used 335s in the studio a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never played a hollow body Fender very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not many.
No.
Not Strats.
Yeah. No, they're not. They do have, there is a Japanese model that's a hollow F-hole Strat, but it's made different than the way mine was made different.
Yeah. You know? And what about your pedal setup?
It's a lot of old stuff. It's really that MXR flanger doubler and a MXR digital delay and Deluxe Memory Man. And I have some Echoplex preamps, just a bunch of old stuff. It's interesting how that stuff really, it's very musically friendly for not adding a lot of AC garbage, you know. I'm always struggling to try to get as pure a sound as I can without all the garbage you get from electronics, which mm-hmm. it's And that's really a challenge because there's so much. You deal with the line voltage and you deal with just the power supplies have an inherent infiltration of spiky garbage that they add. You hear a lot of great players nowadays, and it's really not their fault at all, but sometimes when you hear them, you go, oh, this player is so awesome, but you hear this kind of sound that's kind of just, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really not their fault. I mean, it's quite a struggle to try to get that out of the, if you want to use like distortion electric guitar, a clean guitar is a lot easier, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously you're using a lot of the older like pedals and stuff because you're trying to replicate this record, but are you open-minded to this whole like boutique pedal movement at home, or are you just kind of like set in your ways?
I try them every once in a while when somebody, says, hey, you got to try this pedal. I'll try it. Yeah.
And then what's next for you after this tour?
Well, I did an acoustic record last year, and I have a Volume 2 acoustic record that I've got all the songs written for.
Awesome.
And I have a bunch, like 10 songs written for a new electric record that's going to be a little different approach. And so I've got like those, I want to try to get in the studio and do those, yeah.
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 And what do you, on the acoustic record, do you mainly use your Martin?
Yeah, I use the Matons a little bit, but mostly I used a, my Martin. I have a 1980 D45.
Okay.
It's not too boomy. A lot of times those dreadnoughts are boomy, but with the right mics, this one seems to work pretty well. And then I have an old Gibson I use sometimes, and then I have an old Silvertone I use sometimes.
Yeah. Not your signature model, though?
You know? I used that on one or two takes on the last record.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have the electric record figured out in your head already?
Well, I have the songs written, yeah.
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 Cool.
Yeah.
You have your own studio, right?
I do, yeah.
Is that like adjacent to where you live or nearby?
It's about 10, 15 minutes away.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was your kind of overriding aesthetic or what were you going for with the studio?
I just wanted a place where I could... I just wanted a room where I could practice anytime I wanted that was soundproof.
Yeah.
But I built a big enough building 20 years ago, and it's been finished for about 7 years now. And so every year I would add on, like, you know, okay, we can build the control room now. Now we can build the lobby and that kind of thing. So it was a long process to build the whole thing. But it started off just a big shell that was unfinished with just one room for practicing.
Wow.
But, I just wanted a place to, you know, practice and stuff.
Given his Austin real estate prices, that's probably a great investment.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So I know I'm ready to move out to the country, sell that, and move out to the country or something. But it's way different city than it used to be.
Is the music scene still?
It's really vibrant. It's just blown up. Everywhere, as you know, as the social media attests to, but there's millions of bands.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really good artists too.
Yeah. Final question, what young artists are on your radar that you're loving right now?
Oh, man. I was just thinking, that blues player, Matt King, you heard him?
Yeah.
He's a good singer.
Yeah.
Good player. I was just talking about somebody. Carson Brock's a great player. Somebody else. I'll think of a million of them after y'all leave.
It's all right.
But, who else? We were just talking about somebody. That Jamie Cohen. He's really great. Have you heard him?
No.
He's more of a singer, keyboard player, but he's amazing.
All right.
He's about 24 now, so I guess he's not super young anymore.
All right.
He's not a geezer like me, though. He's really great, yeah.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. All right. That was my conversation with Eric Johnson. I hope you enjoyed it. Once again, we will be doing a longer interview with Eric very soon, but maybe we'll be getting some of his vegan recipes. Stay tuned. Next week's podcast is going to be with Greg Deering of Deering Banjos fame. We're going to get back on the Builder track for a little bit. And once again, if you love this podcast, if you've enjoyed it, if you like getting it in your on your device, whatever device you use every week, please, please, please leave us a review over on iTunes. It'll take about 5 seconds of your time, and it will help us out with our search rankings, which in turn will help us grow.